You're listening to the Isaka Podcast. I'm your host, Safia Kazi, and in this From Page to Podcast series episode, I'm joined by Karen Walsh and Joe Rashke. They wrote an Isaka Journal Volume 5 article about how sustainable development principles could apply to digital transformation. In part one of the podcast, we discussed how cyber sustainability applies to digital transformation. And in this final installment, we're going to discuss how COVID-2019 relates to sustainable development and digital transformation. So to begin, a lot of digital transformation efforts shift the perimeter. What are the implications of this shifting perimeter, and what can organizations do to help keep it secure?
It shifts the perimeter. The perimeter kind of goes away. I've struggled with this a little bit on how do you say identity is the new perimeter. From that point, the implications are there are now more touch points and more of a threat landscape in our organizations than we've ever had before. That becomes the biggest item. You also have a lot of privileges and escalated privileges inside of our applications, whether it's from SaaS, IaaS, infrastructure as a service, or platform as a service, where you really got to understand the full life cycle across who is doing what in your organization. What we've also seen, well, I'll go back to the robotic side of this, is when you have more and more RPAs being defined, who owns the RPAs and what are these RPAs doing, especially inside of that cloud infrastructure, that what we've seen is the more that the RPAs who are programmed by humans are working to get the job done to do more workload automation, they act like people. All of a sudden they see certain conditions and they react as to how they were told to behave, and they behave, which also kind of goes back to that pollution theory that all of a sudden they're generating a lot of extra environmental impact inside of your digital world.
And I think if we go back to that as well, we can talk more about the idea of dynamic attribute-based access controls, ABAC. Whereas a role used to just be your job function and it tied to that. Today, we need to look at everything about you. Where are you? When are you accessing things? How are you accessing things? Sometimes even baking in behavioral analytics, you know, with UEBA is important because then you can create secure identities and maintain that security first perspective.
Right. And you really have like the security. How do you keep it secure? You need the visibility, number one. You've got to be able to get the visibility into what's happening in those environments. And you really need to be able to have automation in place. If I take a look at any of the larger cloud solution providers, they will have anywhere from 50 to 150 different interactive components inside their ecosystem for cloud delivery. If you just turn things on, you're really just introducing security risks and other potential problems in your environment that you need to be aware of. At that point, that really becomes a security challenge. But if you have analytics that are built in with both ABAC, as Karen had discussed, and RBAC roles and permissions, you can really start seeing who's doing what in your environment and what is out of the ordinary that you need to react to. A lot of times, if it's internal, you might be able to say, this is okay, but as that cloud infrastructure is really more of a global impact, you really need to watch that a lot closer.
We're now using so many automated identities, service accounts, et cetera, that interact in our cloud ecosystems that if you go back to Joe's visibility concept, you can't secure your cloud infrastructure unless you have visibility over all of the identities, especially those privileged access ones. I think it was the data breach, the 2019 DBIR talked about the fact that IT administrators are increasingly a threat vector, and privilege misuse is the primary internal problem. And as a security person and a lawyer who doesn't ever practice, I think it's increasingly important to make sure you know all of the identities and you're monitoring all of the identities and you're closing those threat gaps.
Correct. I mean, that lateral movement security risk becomes much more magnified in the cloud when you're doing these digital transformations, that you really have to understand who's doing what and when are they doing it. So privileged access governance and privileged access management, PAG and PAM, if we use those terms, really become a big driver. Once you see that, though, once you've got that ability to look at that visibility into privileged access management, regular access management, kind of you get that for free, not necessarily dollar-wise, but if you're really looking at how you're managing your privileged accounts, you'll understand better how you're managing your regular accounts as well.
And that does all tie back into some of these key components of complex adaptive systems. You have to self-organize to find the tools and the analytics. You have to follow the concept of emergence, where you're tracking that data and you're acting on that data and you're seeing those new patterns, whether it's a behavioral pattern or just a pattern of requests to streamline your business processes. You have to be dynamic and understand that identity is no longer static, it's dynamic. And you just have to keep looking at your entitlements. Can you find a way to limit privileges and entitlements as much as possible? Does that marketing person need to have all access to all your sales information? Probably not. They may only need certain information. And then, you know, go back and do those feedback loops, continuously monitor. Oh, look, we have this set of privileges that maybe shouldn't be given to every marketing person. How do we limit that? How do we better secure?
Right. With that feedback, because what I've seen on the security side in my career has been somebody says, we need to open this up to, like, let's say marketing or sales or IT administrators doing backups. All of a sudden, they've got excessive rights across the board because they're using a certain tool or application that needs to have elevated privileges. But there's no easy way to segregate those user accounts for like a backup user versus a regular user. Then all of a sudden, you've got this issue that your threat landscape has really gotten wider because you've got a few people that have way too many rights and privileges across the enterprise for a very specific use case. Where if you were able to do it on a temporal basis, it would be much more secure.
And so how does COVID 2019 tie in with everything that we've discussed previously?
When I looked through COVID 2019, before it was the official standard, while it was still in review, there's a lot of things where you're focusing on a holistic approach rather than a specific check-the-box approach. So in the article, I focus on EDM-02, which is the concept of secure enabling initiatives, services, and assets, cost delivery, cost-efficient delivery of things. And then you start going into it. What are the objectives? And I think IFACA did a really excellent job of creating these four things that are management objectives and then these governance objectives that go across all of the framework and enable that feedback loop, which is extremely important. You know, you have to talk to your internal stakeholders. You have to organize and embrace cutting edge automation. When you look at COVID 2019, the guidelines in the framework are even more helpful than the actual requirements of the framework. You can't just look at, oh, and check the box. Okay, yeah, I answered 1.3.1. I answered 1.1.1. You need to delve in a little deeper and look at what it's actually trying to do and what it's sort of at the thought process it's working you through, because I think that's really difficult sometimes, is understanding the thought process of compliance. That it's not just, okay, here's a checklist. I'm going to check all these boxes. I'm going to do all the things it tells me to do, but think about why you're doing it.
Right. And really, I like the section of the governance ensuring, like, stakeholder needs. Really taking a look at what's going to determine, like, that balanced enterprise objectives. There are a number of times where we've seen, if you can say what you're going to do, we've seen where situations within healthcare where specific devices, there was a rule that said everything must have multi-factor authentication. There was a limited use case where doctors treating patients said that was an unacceptable risk to them, that if they couldn't actively get into the devices that had the information that were going to help the patient, it critically impacted the healthcare that they could provide to those patients. So there's a bit of that balancing of technology and security from a compliance standpoint into a risk-based world that COVID 2019 starts to address.
And when I was writing the article, again, from the internal auditor standpoint, I was looking around governance, and there was the concept of complex adaptive governance, which focuses, at least the article that I quote in my article, talks about it in terms of governments creating environmentally sustainable laws. But one of the tenets is this concept of power and agency. And I think that a lot of people feel they are not empowered to take control of security and privacy, whether it's business leaders, whether it's your CISO, everyone is saying these things are happening and they're out of my control. But then you look at COBIT and it says define and communicate roles and responsibilities for enterprise IT, including authority levels responsibilities, ensure that administrative privileges are sufficiently and effectively secured. That gives you power and agency. It gives you guidance towards how you can take control of your IT infrastructure and create a security first program that is also compliant. So that flexibility with risk analyses and continuous monitoring gives you the information that you need to adapt, to change your outcomes, to say, this isn't working, we need to fix this.
So a lot of people, when they talk about digital transformation, they're just talking about using new technologies. But what can organizations do to create true digital transformation that's more than just using new and emerging technologies?
From a digital transformation standpoint, I would say a lot of times people think it's very disruptive. At a certain point, you're still fundamentally asking yourself, how can I help my customers be better? It's not necessarily about creating new markets from a red ocean, blue ocean perspective. You still have to be able to ask your customers, what's going to be beneficial to you for what we're developing? For manufacturing, how do I work with my customers to manufacture a new part or a product that they need? You still have to think of what the users are and what they're trying to accomplish from a business perspective. So that it doesn't always have to be, we have to use disruptive technology. It's more of, how do you have this different business risk component, and how does this enhance our customers or our potential customers' outcomes? A lot of times we see that identity governance and administration really becomes a foundation that you can build into the product that you're developing, really from a standpoint of hybrid identities. How do you really see our solution going together? What's the income from an ecological standpoint? What does that mean in our environment? What has to change? At that point, you are having those conversations with the business leaders. How do you put privacy and security first? At a certain point, I always put it, let's think about the impact to the people. What are the outcomes? What are the likely outcomes of what's going to happen when you're doing this digital transformation? So that becomes much more of, how do you put it ingrained? You can't. It's hard to say you have to think of security and privacy first, but it really becomes, when we're developing these new business applications and this digital transformation, you've got to start with the business leaders and IT being part of that conversation when the business leaders have questions about risk and security.
And I think to build on that, even if you're not developing a new product, but you're just incorporating a new technology, part of your vendor risk management program needs to start with risk. Who is going to access my systems? How is this vendor's technology going to integrate with my infrastructure? At what point do I let their service account touch my data sources to do an update? And what is the API integration going to do? How is that going to work back and forth? What is the right access level? And how do you manage that? And I think even before you go on a digital transformation journey, you need to start with, how am I going to control things? Everything starts with risk. Your digital transformation strategy should be no different. It should start with, what are the risks to my information? And how is this going to impact the way people and non-people identities interact within my data ecosystem, within my infrastructure? And then you say, okay, so I need to control the identities first. I need to figure out where I can find something to help me manage it. Because if you're just taking in the tools and you're using, you know, your built-in tools to start, that's fantastic because a lot of them are great. But if you start looking at 5, 6, 10 different automations, SaaS applications, pass structure, I ask structure, you start saying, oh, well, I have 16 different dashboards that I have to look at every day. How am I going to manage segregation of duties? And that becomes very difficult if you don't take identity as your first step going into your transformation strategy.
I think that's also pointed out in COVID 2019 with like this continuous improvement, enabling focusing on reorganizing, adapting to this new environment. I don't think you could do it overnight. I think it does have to be in that iterative type motion of moving forward.
So to wrap things up, can you tell us a little bit about predictive access and how it relates to data privacy and security?
You really want to be able to figure out risky behaviors and risky actions. With a lot of different identity tools and solutions that are out there, you really are starting to get into understanding what's happening in your environment. I was first introduced into this from the standpoint from a cybersecurity perspective, where as soon as somebody's credentials were compromised, we would see another system being accessed globally to get some of that visibility. And what was interesting was I thought, well, that was just a very quick script or somebody had this. What I ended up realizing was that when people were being taken advantage of and they're giving up their credentials, those credentials were being tested immediately across the globe, that whoever the bad guy was that was trying to access a system, they were really trying to get into to make sure that the credential they stole was a valid credential. So at that point, with more predictive analytics and really having the visibility inside your systems about who is doing what, how they have access, where do they get access, and understanding that type of governance, that really becomes a major point of how do you really make this cyber sustainability and cybersecurity really focus in on what's the business impact and the risk outcomes or the risk analysis that you're going to do when you're implementing new solutions.
And I think the flip side of that coin is that predictive access gives you a better strategic outcome. If you are comparing users and their usage and where they're coming into your system and saying, oh, well, three of the seven people in marketing all need this access. Well, then shouldn't everybody have it? You're streamlining your business operations, and it allows you to better focus on the risks. You don't need to always think about things in the negative. Sometimes it's interesting to think of them from the positive. What is the business enablement of this identity governance tool? Oh, the enablement is it makes it easier for everybody because, say, 60% of the access requests are automated. As long as your policies and your entitlements can protect you from access misuse, I think it can be a boon and streamline your strategies.
The term that I will use from time to time, there's outliers of maybe who shouldn't have access, so it's easier for audit to pick out when there's a problem, or the business picks out a problem when there's somebody has excessive rights. But like Karen says, like the inliers, wait, like you said, four out of these 10 people have access to this system and they're productive. All of a sudden you can say, no, these other four people that do the exact same job probably should also have the same access. There might be tools that are available to people that they don't even know that are there.
Thanks, Karen and Joe. And that's all we have time for in this episode of the podcast. If you're interested in learning more, read Karen and Joe's two-part Isoca Journal article, Sustainable Development for Digital Transformation.